Welcome to Startup Start Now podcast with your host, Sharina Shiv, a podcast aimed to showcase real and relatable entrepreneurs, side hustlers, and their mentors all living in the UK. Welcome to episode 63, everyone. I hope you guys are keeping really well. So welcome to 2024. I really hope that this podcast will be your soundtrack for the year. And last year, I was super focused on getting the right guests for you guys and consistently showing up. And this year, I am looking towards growth and expansion. I want to be able to meet you guys, and I want to be able to bring you these entrepreneurs in person and have these live conversations. Last year, I added a feature which was questions from the audience, and I love week in, week out receiving your guys' questions on social media, which obviously means there's quite an appetite for you guys wanting to get in front of them. So watch this space. I am manifesting it. I'm putting it out there that we are going to be doing some in-person events this year, and you guys will be absolutely the first ones to know. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. It's not too late to join. It's also not too late to go back and listen to the other 62 episodes of amazing British entrepreneurs. We here confidently chat to the creme de la creme, and everything from early stage startups to founders that are number one billionaire, youngest billionaire businesses, through to founders that have exited. And I am just so proud of the growth in the 3.5 years. For those of you that don't know me, and the reason I'm doing this introduction again is because, you know, I want you guys to get to know me a little bit as well. So my name is Sharina. I actually started my property management business down in Devon 7 years ago. I have been running the business alongside going and studying a master's at Cambridge in entrepreneurship and innovation. And I also have recently moved to London. 3.5 years ago during COVID, I decided to start the podcast because when I started my property management business, I wished there was a resource like this. I wish I could have put my AirPods in, painted a wall, done the carpeting, and listened to British entrepreneurs telling me the highs and lows of being on a very lonely journey. And that's what we do. We do that here week in, week out. And it's no different. This week, I am joined by another amazing entrepreneur. And to kick us off of 2024, I am speaking to Richard Joseph. He is the CEO and co-founder of Joseph & Josephs. He runs the business with his twin brother, which is Anthony Joseph. And Joseph & Joseph is a homeware manufacturer. They're best known for their design-led products, things like chopping boards, kitchen utensils, and they just innovate around the house. I actually don't know a single person in the UK that doesn't have a Joseph & Joseph product. I'm sure that's not going to come as a surprise to you guys as you listen to sort of the podcast. Their award-winning products are also not just here in the UK, they're also in an international presence. They've been running the business for over 20 years, and they're stocked in major retailers such as Selfridges, Harrods, John Lewis. I actually saw them in Dunelm as I was doing my January shop the other day. So everywhere and anywhere. And they really are all based on kind of design and revolutioning kind of the tasks around the house. I really hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Again, lots of nuggets. Great to, you know, understand more about how Richard and Anthony started the business. As always, if you do enjoy the podcast, please share it with someone you think would benefit from this episode. Enjoy the conversation. So welcome to Startup Start Now, Richard. Thank you so much for joining me today on Cyber Monday. What are you doing talking to me?
Well, Grace, great to be here. Yeah, I know we've had a hectic weekend. The teams have been working right through the weekend. Pleased to say things have gone to plan, which is great. And everything, they seem to have come in and people aren't too stressed this morning, which is good.
Good. So, I mean, I can't wait to get into Joseph & Joseph and, you know, all the products you sell. But kind of give me how this weekend has been. Is it just like, do you sit there and follow the sales online, or, you know, how does it work?
Yeah, so we have a bit of a mix actually. So we are a wholesale business, so we supply retailers like in the UK, John Lewis, and retailers like that. And then we also sell direct to consumers through our own website. So we have a bit of a mix. So definitely for the sales that we do through our own website, we track that, particularly because the volumes go up so substantially over this weekend. And like I said, we have the teams in working the full weekend just to make sure that everything is coming in and working to plan and going out the door on time, etc.
Amazing. We'll definitely get into all of that later on in the podcast. But here on Startup Start Now, we love to find out more about your early days. So can you give me an idea about where you grew up and what you were like as a student?
Yeah, so I was born in Birmingham, and mum and dad still live there. And I went to school around Birmingham initially, and then I ended up in a school up in Lancashire. I wasn't particularly academic, and I run the business with my twin brother, Anthony. So both of us were at school together, both not that academic, but we loved sort of the arts or art and design and making things, which started off at the school we're at in Birmingham, had a woodwork class run by this guy called Ted. And we loved making things. And we were in that, you know, we sort of loved learning how to make things out of wood. And it sort of then developed into design. And there was a design and technology class. So we got involved in design technology. And that was our passion. So we sort of immersed ourselves in that, followed that the whole way through school and then into university, where we both studied. Well, I studied industrial design, which is a sort of form of product design, and Anthony studied product design. So we followed that the whole way through.
Right.
So that was our sort of passion.
Amazing. And you said twins. Are you guys identical or?
So we're non-identical. So effectively, like if you were to meet us, it's sort of like meeting brothers who were born at the same time.
And who's older?
So Anthony's older by 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Does that bother you?
No, I've kind of got used to it now. And, it's good. It works.
The younger brother. There we go.
The younger brother. Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. And I know obviously you run the business now with him. So after sort of finding that passion from Ted, you know, at school and enjoying design work, where did you go on to study?
So we both went off to university. Anthony studied product design in London at Central St. Martin's. And I went to Loughborough, which obviously is very big for sport, but also has a fantastic engineering department there. So I studied industrial design at Loughborough, and I did that for 3 years. And then came out of university, and my journey was, I then actually went into work. So I went and worked for the Body Shop initially as a product designer.
Okay.
And they were developing I developed sort of perfume bottles for them, et cetera. And then went to work for Dyson as a design engineer. And got involved with him and his business quite early on. So I worked on his third vacuum cleaner at the time. And I did that before then leaving and going back to university. And I studied a postgrad in manufacturing management and design at Cambridge.
Yeah. Amazing. What college were you part of?
So I was in a postgrad college called Wolfson College. At Cambridge.
I know it very well.
Oh, you do, yeah. Good, yeah. No, we had a brilliant time. I mean, it was the year at Cambridge was amazing because it was all about getting you into companies. So you get to see how lots and lots of different companies worked, whether they be manufacturing companies, service companies, and you would go and spend time in those businesses, either on really short daily projects or fortnightly projects, and you just get immersed. And they were so it was a brilliant sort of exposure to lots and lots of different types of businesses. Because at the time, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew that I had this sort of entrepreneurial streak. And I was like, you know, I'd love to do something with product and setting my own thing up. But I didn't really know what. I'd obviously had the experience of Dyson, which was incredibly inspiring for me at the time. Because it was sort of this, it was really a huge, successful product-based business that was a disruptor, an innovation business. You know, they embraced failure. It was all these brilliant sort of, I got a great sort of learning experiences whilst I was there that definitely was helping me shape, formulate what I wanted to do.
And I guess some would obviously, I guess from the design background, would see Dyson as, you know, the place to be. What was it that was kind of tapping you on the shoulder and then saying, you know what, there's something else I want to try. You know, I do want to go and study and, you know, that the entrepreneurial side. What kept sort of happening in your mind to think that there was more than just staying at Dyson at this dream job?
Yeah, so I was a design engineer there, and I was probably one of, at the time, maybe 300 design engineers.
Right.
And there was definitely a career path there. You could easily see a way forward and grow, but it would have been within being a design engineer, making products for that company. And I felt that I really wanted to do it. I wanted to experience the whole thing myself. I thought there'd be something really magical about coming up with a clever idea, packaging it, marketing it, selling it, and just experiencing the whole thing, as opposed to just being part of that process, designing the product, but then, within a different business. So, but we didn't have the idea at the time, but it was very much like I wanted to experience that whole thing as a designer, but, that entrepreneurial streak of saying, well, I want to set up a business and actually sell my own ideas, was what the sort of journey I wanted to go on.
Amazing.
And that was really why I decided to come out of Dyson at that point and go in do a master's, because I thought, particularly this course at Cambridge, I thought that would give me great exposure to give me more ideas on how I could get started.
And definitely. And I just think the people that you meet at Cambridge, I mean, every single conversation is magical. I spent last weekend there, and having now moved to London, I really miss those intellectual conversations and subjects that I have. You know, I don't know anybody that I came across that knows about space or history the way they do. And it's not no more business, chat. It's so
inspiring. Amazing. Yes, it is. Definitely.
Amazing. So you had your year there, and then what did you end up doing?
So then came out of the year at Cambridge, and I was like, right, I was dead set on this idea of saying, like, I want to start a business, but I need a great idea. And and I was chatting to my dad. My dad ran a manufacturing business in Birmingham, a family manufacturing business, which my grandfather had set up in the 1930s. And dad said to me, look, he was very supportive in the idea, but he said, look, if you want to start a business, you've got to learn to sell, because ultimately, whether you're selling a product, service, you're selling yourself, whatever you're doing, you need to learn to sell or get some exposure in that. So come and work for me in this glass manufacturing business in the sales team, and I'll teach you how to sell. And I thought, well, okay, that sounds like a great grounding. And it gets me sort of some, gets a salary. And I was still in my 20s, so I was still enjoying myself and all this. And it gave me great sort of grounding in the sales process. I just didn't enjoy the product I was selling at the time, being industrial glass components. But it was great grounding. And actually, when we eventually decided to start our own product, and it was a discussion with Ant about saying, let's put a really small collection together. We used the family manufacturing business to actually make the initial product, which was a glass chopping board.
Okay.
And we, bizarrely, but anyway, but the logic was because it was a highly functional product that had a real strong, unique selling point. It had a really strong difference in the market. And it was a product that people use every day. So we loved that idea of like functional products people use every day. And we also thought everyone's got one, at least one chopping board at home. Maybe they've got two or three. So it's probably a big market as well. So that was our sort of journey. And the sort of financial leg up that we got from Dad at the start was £10,000 worth of glass stock, not cash. It was like, he was like, look, I'll give you this these glass blanks that you can turn into chopping boards, £10,000. Make the product, make a profit, then reinvest that profit and get the business started that way. And that was it. And we didn't get the glass, we got the stock value, but that was it. So we had to learn how to very quickly turn that into a business and make a profit to be able to reinvest and grow and grow and grow and from there.
Amazing.
So it was a good grounding.
So I guess that brings us then to, Joseph and Joseph. Can you give our listeners a 30-second pitch just in case they've not come across the brand before?
Yeah, certainly. So I'd say Joseph, we're a product design business focused on sort of consumer products for the home. So we make household products across lots of different categories. And our big focus is like on problem solutions. So we look for problems in the way that products work or the way people perform tasks in the home. And we try and then create products that work better to give a consumer a better experience, deliver better functionality, et cetera, et cetera. And so We're predominantly in areas of the home like the kitchen, whether that be food preparation, so kitchen gadgets or chopping boards, but also bins. We have products in the bathroom, we have laundry products, and then a lot around cleaning and organization as well. So lots of different categories within the home, but it's all centered around products that perform better on sort of problem, look for the problem and come up with a great solution.
I love doing this podcast because I get to meet, brands that I've been surrounded with from child, and you guys have been running this now for, is it 20 plus years?
20 years, yeah.
Wow. So definitely lots to kind of uncover. And I guess that was before we had the internet and so forth. Wait, is it?
It was actually at the start. Yeah, it was. You're right. It was at the start because it was when we first went out. I mean, I was still calling customers, or there was no connecting on email. It was very much either call them or go and see them, knock on the door, and that was how we got started when we first started selling our cutting boards. Was my role, as we split our roles to try and sort of divide and conquer between the two of us, because it just started out with the two of us. And I was doing the sales bit, and I would go around independent retailers in London knocking on doors. And I felt that with the independents, you generally have the owner of the shop would probably be the person behind the till, because they're small and independent shops. So you could go and meet the owner and then try and sell, these fantastic new chopping boards that we created. And I did that. I'd walk around London with my bag of samples, knocking on doors. That was how we got started.
Wait, so are you carrying your glass chopping boards around London?
100, yeah, 100%, yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah,
And
got my.
definitely you've just mentioned, obviously you split the roles. Most people have to look far and wide for a co-founder, but yours was your brother. Who
Yes.
sort of decided to bring the idea? Who pitched it to who? Or were you very much on the same journey about what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think we're very much on the same journey. I think it was both of us love the idea of actually let's put our own products together and start that whole thing about design it, package it, market it, sell it on in retail. And it was all wholesale. So we were selling to retailers. There was no website where we were selling direct. And we just loved that journey. And I think, yeah, we just came together. I mean, I can't even remember. It wasn't a single conversation. It sort of evolved over a few weeks. And then we got started, and we just got started. I mean, I think that that was it. But we really believed in what we were doing. We thought we had a great idea, a great product, and I think that that made the sales process for me a lot easier, because we were passionate about it. We believed in it, and we sort of went from there.
And I guess with your name, it's obviously both of your surnames and you've popped that together. But when I've started businesses, I've always thought of making sure that I have the service that I'm delivering in the title. So Startup Start Now tells you that it's all about startup devotion, property management has in the title what it does.
Yeah.
Did you originally start off as Joseph and Joseph, or was it Joseph and Joseph Homeware or?
It's always been Joseph Joseph, and there was no. It was more about let's just put a brand together that just probably that they, that works, that we have a connection with, and we can fit it on the packaging and it looks great, and we can make work. And I mean, that was the extent of our sort of marketing strategy from a brand point of view. We thought that we'd let the product, as we still do now, let the product do the talking, make sure we package it well so that we can get across to consumers what the thing does. Because at the time, it was a bit of an odd product, a glass chopping board. People were like, what the heck is this? How does this work? That doesn't sort of sound right. So you had to get across what the thing did, on the packaging. So we were more focused on that, I guess. And we just had this brand that we could stamp onto things that was easy enough to recognize and say it was ours.
Amazing. So let's talk about your initial customers. I know you said you were sort of traipsing around London with this
Yeah.
bag of chopping boards. But how did you convert those business owners that have the independence? What kind of lines were you using?
Oh gosh, take me right back. I mean, so it was interesting. We had this glass on board, and you would think the natural home for it at the start was in kitchen shops, but it wasn't. We actually did, because of the way we packaged it and we made it quite giftable, we actually got a lot better traction in sort of independent lifestyle home stores, And so they sort of those, and there were quite at the time there were quite a lot of quirky sort of kitsch home stores, and we were sort of in there. We were sort of doing well with those guys. I mean, I remember even in Soho, one of I we ended up in a store in Soho, deepest, darkest Soho, and you can imagine what that store was probably selling. But we managed to get our glass chopping boards into the store, and they did a huge we did a huge business with them. They're still there today. That store's still there today, but not selling any of our stuff. But anyway, so it was for me, it was like, if they've got a consumer that goes in that could buy it, I'll try and get it in there. And we sort of, so it was, and also we were trying to survive, you know. So it was very much about like, hey, if you want to stock it, let's do this, you know. So because we were trying to get enough customers on board to get things moving. And then, but I had lots of rejection, lots of knockback. I mean, it was sort of, it's tough. I'm not going to, you know, we talk about, we look at it through rose-tinted glasses maybe 20 years on, but it was super tough. And we, for the first 3 or 4 years, it was a bit touch and go as to whether we would make it. And I remember we had a couple of big breakthroughs. One was with a department store called Alders, who are no longer around, unfortunately, but at the time they were based in Croydon. They had 50 stores in the UK, quite a big department store chain, and they had a cook shop department. And so the cook shop department was headed up by a lady called Alison Charlton, who was brilliant for us, but she really sort of saved us, because she said, look, I like your chopping boards, I like what you do, if you guys do more kitchenware, I'll buy it from you. So we were like, fantastic. And she gave us a big order. I think it's about 15,000 pounds or 13 15,000 pounds, which really sort of saved us at the start. And then we went back and we started doing more chopping boards, because we thought, well, there's 50 chopping board shelves in those 50 stores, so let's do the best plastic, glass, wood chopping boards we can, and let's own that shelf. And then we'd sort of roll it out from there. And so that ended up being our sort of product strategy, and it worked. And then we went to another big name on the high street, and knocked on their door. And because we were so small as a business, they were like, we're too small for us to stock you. And so we got, not even though we could see the product was selling, we got this quite major sort of knockback, which really sort of affected us, because we were like, doesn't make sense. We've got, like, we think we've got the best product on the market, it's selling really well, you should stock us. They're like, you're just too small, guys, we're not going to list you as a supplier because you're too small. So then I managed to get hold of a department store, a list of department stores across Europe, and I got a list of phone numbers of the buyers. And I was like, right, I'm going to call them all, and if any of them speak English, I'm going to try and see them, because I don't really, my French, German, Swiss is not very good. French, German is not very good. And so I went to, I managed to find buyers in Switzerland, France, and Germany that spoke English. I got in my car and I drove with my bag of samples and I went to see them. And I got listings in those three countries before we got the bigger listing in the UK. So it was all about, you know, it was a lot to do with survival, but also belief in the product. This was a great product, and sort of, and thinking, well, chopping boards, everyone's got one. So if it sells in the UK, why can't it sell in France and Germany and Switzerland, etc.? So.
Definitely. And then, and it's amazing to hear you're now listed with them. So
Yes,
you
yeah.
already sort of started your international expansion at that point. How many years into the business was that then?
So probably it was only about 18 months in that we
Wow.
went. Yeah. And so and like I said, it wasn't an export plan. It was more just another customer. Okay, they're in this market, but we can sell to them. We worked out the pricing, we worked out how to get it to them. And we sort of, in a way, we went. And I guess also we relied on a few buyers in these retailers who had belief as well. They loved what we were doing, and they gave us that opportunity, but we wouldn't have got it without getting in the car with a bag of samples and going and seeing them, you know.
And I guess like nowadays, we rely on being influenced a lot by social media or friends sharing photos of, what works in their kitchen and so forth. But take us back to how sort of the marketing and the brand awareness was growing back
Yeah.
then.
So we did it very differently back then, and it was about getting the product on shelf, actually, to get the word out there. To get visibility of the brand, because we didn't have money to do any marketing activity. So we felt like, let's get the product on shelf, let's package it really well, let's try and get, if we can, some sort of display into the best stores, and try and get a name, because that just would then build momentum and hopefully more buyers and more consumers would see the brand and we could start to build it that way. And that's what we've done and continue to do today. And obviously it took time. You know, we're listed in lots and lots of retailers, but we've been at it for 20 years. So, you know, it's been a sort of we've managed to develop it over many years.
Amazing. So then what came after chopping boards?
So I think at the time it was definitely, I think the colander shelf was on the shelf below the chopping boards in Alders. So we did colanders and we tried to do the best colanders we could. And then when we did colanders, it was kitchen gadgets and but it was very much focused on
Please don't tell
kitchen.
me you did glass colanders.
No, we didn't do glass colanders. We might have had a go, but I don't think we never weren't successful. You know, and we were so it was in so we ended up in kitchen and like even in the early days when we were talking to PR when we had PR agency or whatever, and they were like, you know. In interviews, they'd be like, tell people, you know, that you cook. And we're like, well, we don't cook. We don't really cook. I mean, like, we can cook like anybody, like, you know, we can get friends over and have dinner, et cetera, but we're not mad cooks. But the PR people are like, you've got to tell them you cook because you do all this kitchen work. We're like, no, we're designers, we're product designers. What we can do is we try and understand a problem and come up with a solution. We could be any area of the home, but we're focusing on kitchen because it's brilliant because they're daily, these are products people use every single day. So isn't that wonderful to develop something that someone uses every day. And it's sort of a so we loved it for that. And that was very much our focus.
So I guess obviously being a product designer, you've got to think out the box. Innovation's absolutely key. Where does one keep getting that kind of source of new ideas? And what's worked for both you and Anthony, and now your product designers within the business? How do you get enlightened by?
Ideas. So, I mean, I'd say that we do what a lot of people do, you know, just in your daily lives. I'm sure you probably come and interact with products and you're like, God, I could do this better, or oh, so frustrating, this doesn't work. Or so we're doing, there's a lot of looking at functional products or functions or environments and saying, how could we do something better? And so whether that be, you know, observation, being out in the home, being out and about, whether it be taking products that already exist and trying to work out how we could do them better. So it's a there's a big funnel of ideas coming in at the front end from lots of different areas, and we encourage our team to do the same. And then we have a design process that we follow, which an ideation process that is designed to filter out stuff that really isn't an issue for consumers and try and land on the stuff where we're like, yeah, this is a real problem we need to try and solve. And then we go through a development process to try and come up with a really clever solution. And it still harks back to our school days of making stuff. So we're really hands-on. So we say to our teams, like, you know, our design teams, like, get in the workshop, make prototypes, make models, prove a concept through a physical, and it can be made out of cardboard or plastic or glue with glue guns, et cetera. It doesn't have to be fancy, but prove the idea through model making. And so in our design studio, we have a glass box, and our workshop is a glass box in the middle of our studio. And so everybody can see we're designer makers. We're not sitting behind computers just creating nice
Add
images.
designs,
It's hands-on, and that's what we love. So we love the whir of the milling machines, the whir of the sanding machines. We love the sawdust or whatever it is. It's about making stuff.
That's awesome. That sounds like a fun place to work, Richard.
I mean, we
Come and
still
do
have
some
the
work
there's also
experience.
well there's still but then there's also the commercial pressure of actually you've got to create the product, you know, because we've got to get it out there. But I think being rooted in sort of model making and proving an idea through 3D is fun.
So then you've made your sort of cardboard or paper mache version of what you want to create. How does that then convert into actually being manufactured, and where does it get manufactured?
So we then, and this is obviously this equipment is all developed over time. I mean, but now we can 3D print, and we do a lot of 3D printing. We have obviously 3D printing on site and also in the office, and then we also outsource some of our more high sort of tolerance 3D prints. So we can 3D print now full mock-up products, which we can test, which we can test and prove that work before we go to tooling, because obviously when you if you're creating a product that is fabricated out of steel or injection molded, it requires huge investment in tooling to make the product, because then it becomes mass, let's say mass produced. So we want to prove the concept before we do that. So then we work with manufacturers to create the tooling, produce the prototype, produce the pre-production runs, which we then test extensively before we then end up with a product that we can put on sale.
Amazing. And obviously you said you started 20 years ago with a product. How many products do you now stock then?
So we've got about 600 in the range at the moment. Wow. Yeah. And but obviously, and some of those have been in the range in the range for a long time. Others may come in and exit probably faster than we would have liked when we were developing it, but that's sort of, that's life, you know. I mean, we fail a lot. We fail a lot. I mean, and we encourage it in, as our, part of our development process, because you learn a huge amount by failing. So I know that failure can be difficult sometimes to stomach. It's fantastic if you fail and you end up with a better product that you launch, and it's less motivating if you keep failing and then you decide you have to pull the plug because it's just never going to go anywhere. But we sort of fail, but we're pretty persistent in trying to find a great idea. And I think that persistence piece is really key as well. If you have real belief in what you're doing, keep going. We sort of want to go beyond the point where our competitors may have pulled the plug and said, no, there's nothing in this. And then we go beyond and find the great idea. That's sort of our mantra.
And out of those 600 products, you know, what's been the one that's caught you a little bit off guard and gone, wow, didn't think that was going to be as popular?
I mean, I think there's quite a few, I guess. We always, you know, when we're developing, because we launch about 100 products a year. Okay. So we have a lot of products in development. And it's always the ones that you didn't think were going to probably be the runaway successes that turn out to be the runaway successes. And the other ones that you're sure, you know, you think it's a surefire it's going to be a success, are usually like middle of the pack. So function is really important for us. It's stuff, like I said, people use. So we've just developed a laundry hamper where a laundry basket where you can separate, so your darks and lights, and also then carry the contents to the washing machine or the sink, etc. And no one had really done that before. So it's sort of both separation and portability in this unit. And that's resonated well with consumers. They think they like the idea and it seems to be doing quite well.
That's brilliant. There's nothing worse than, and I'm looking at my laundry basket. Yeah. There is nothing worse than having to like do a wash, take all the darks out, then do the lights. Exactly. And where do they end up? On the floor, right? So,
And then the hamper is these compartments are the right size for a full load. So you can only take, when it reaches the top, you can use, take it to full load.
Right.
So it sort of helps you with that as well. Anyway, so that seems to be working quite well.
Amazing. And what's been your bestseller of all time then?
I mean, still for us, we have a folding chopping board that is a single molded folding chopping board because it's a brilliant design, and it solves one really simple issue, which is if you chop carrots on a chopping board and you then try and scrape them into a pot, they tend to go everywhere but the pot, or 50% go in the pot and the rest go all over the side or down the back of the cooker or whatever it is. This chopping board has a handle on it. When you chop, you can pick it up, it folds into a chute and it pours the contents into a pot. Mm-hmm. And it's a really simple product, but
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Chop to pot. We've tested it. It's tested to 10,000 folds, so it never breaks. So it's just this really robust, it's dishwasher safe. It's a fantastic little chopping board. So that's probably our bestseller.
Amazing. And is there any products that you've discontinued that you now like regret and you're like, damn it, shouldn't have done that?
I mean, I think there are loads we've discontinued, loads that haven't worked for whatever reason. But when I think we regret every single one, because we've sort of poured our heart and soul into developing them, spent probably 2 years developing them, and then they just didn't work for whatever reason. We either got the pricing wrong, it didn't meet a consumer need, or the consumer needs them big enough, whatever the reason. So or we were just a bit too wacky with the design. I don't know. We didn't quite get it right. But we're probably sorry to see all of them go. But, you know, that's part of, the journey, isn't it, developing a business? It's never a straight line. You have lots of failures along the way. You just learn from them and get on with it.
And so how many patents are you filing a year then?
Well, so we do a combination of design registration, which is a form of protection, and patents. But we will design, register, and patent everything, every product we launch.
Right,
Yeah,
okay.
so we protect everything. And that's been a really important step for us, which we've done from the start, but we were hammered with copy products probably from sort of when we started to get traction from, let's say, our 5th year to our 10th year. We were copied relentlessly by various manufacturers or other brands, etc. And it was a real wake-up call. So we then had to really ramp up our what we were doing from the protection side, and have built an in-house team to deal with it. We spent in our 10th year, we spent more money on legal proceedings than we did on design, which was a really sorry state of affairs. But that was something we had to do at the time. Learned a lot from it.
And I guess that's again really important. It's like learning a new craft within the business. So obviously you've gone from perhaps being in the design part yourself to then employing people. You wear HR, you do marketing, and now you're becoming sort of this like legal expert. How do you continuously keep learning? I know you said you went to university, did a master's, but how do you keep?
So I think you're. I think I'm a sponge for learning. I mean, and I love. I mean, the we set up the journey. Set up the company to go on a journey. Let's say to build something, to build a business, build products, build business. And we don't, with no end game in sight. And so the thrill we get is you're always learning. There are always problems. There are things you have to deal with on a daily basis. We're fortunate as you grow a business, you can bring brilliant people in. And so then in these areas where I'm not an expert, we bring experts in who are far better at it than me. And then, they can help then develop the business in those specialist areas. At the start, it's the true definition of an entrepreneur. You get involved in everything, and you do, and you work out, how do I do my first hire? How do I talk to the bank manager about the loan or the overdraft facility, and how do I then keep the bank manager happy as I'm desperately trying to keep the business afloat and keep things moving forward? How do I manage both product development and customer relationships? That's the true sense of an entrepreneur. You're doing it all. I think one of the things I did very early on with Anthony was get a mentor in the business to help. And so and we found someone who still works with me today as our chairman. Who I just wanted, I was like, look, we're ambitious. We want to grow this business. We want to continue to do what develop great products. Why not try and find someone who's been there and done it, who can give us some words of wisdom to try and keep us on the straight path and make as few mistakes as possible. We all make mistakes, but if we get a great mentor, they can help us. And we're very lucky to find someone who we've been working with now. I've worked with for 16, 17 years, and he's done just that. So that, I guess,
That's
has
incredible.
also helped the learning.
And then did you, so you, he started as a mentor and then you brought him on to become a chairman?
Correct. Yeah. So he started a mentor. He's probably a mentor, sort of business mentor for the first 4 or 5 years. As the business then started to grow, he took a sort of more formal role, non-exec chairman.
Amazing. I definitely put sort of me starting businesses down to the mentors and the people that I've crossed paths with. And
Yeah.
I will ask, I will always ask people for favors. But how did you then change that relationship from becoming a mentor to then getting him to sort of step up into a bit more of a senior role?
I think that just came naturally, actually, as the business grew. And I think, yeah, it just became natural. And I think as we then grew the team, it was about having him in a more formal role so that he could do more sort of cross teamwork, as opposed to just working with Anthony and myself. And the other thing I'd just say is so that has definitely been one area where I've gained a huge amount as we've grown the business. And the other one is actually connecting, as you say, connecting with other entrepreneurs and other people you meet. We've met some fantastic people over the years and still in touch with a lot of people, whether you meet them through networking events or competitions or awards events or whatever, you can build this network and you'll find that people are very generous with their time and with what they're, information they're prepared to share, etc. So as long as you're not a competitor, there are plenty of businesses where you don't compete, but you can network with some brilliant people who love to share information. So I think for budding entrepreneurs or budding business people, definitely building a network is key. and then start to share information. You learn a lot that way.
Definitely, definitely. I think there's something so powerful in just being able to pick up the phone to someone who's also, going through the similar aches and pains, and they just have a completely different perspective on it. And, you need that, and that can save you time and, more importantly, money. You guys are stocked in Dunelm, my favorite place, that Harrods, Selfridges, M&S, John Lewis, as you mentioned. Obviously, I know it's taken time, it's taken years to build those relationships and to kind of get into those places. You also talked about another department store, but how do you go about working with these large businesses?
So, I think as the brand and the business grows, you build momentum, and so that helps you get in at least get meetings maybe with other retailers because they've spotted you elsewhere or they've seen the brand grow, etc. But at the start, it's tough. It took us 4 years to really get going, and that was a lot to do with belief in the product. Make sure you've got a great product or service. I would say about starting a business, it's all about the product, it's all about the idea. If you have a really great idea that you believe in, you believe it has a strong point of difference to what's already available on the market, that gets you 60, 70% of the way there. And if it starts to sell, it will then start to build momentum. Perseverance is key. You get tons and tons of knockbacks. You get lots of rejection early on. No matter who, wherever you're going, whether that be talking to the bank manager or talking to customers, etc., you're going to get lots of knockbacks. But it's if you have a belief that what you're selling, what you're offering is a great product or service, you keep going. And I think it's then also try and be as creative as possible. I think with retail, if you're talking to retailers or any customer, also find out what they're looking for. What do they want? Because obviously then you can tailor what you're offering to meet their needs, and that helps you also get in, as opposed to just hammering your message home. Find out what they're interested in. What is it that they want from a young startup, exciting, cool, disruptive brand? And sort of go from there.
Great, great advice. And obviously working with your brother, amazing. You've been able to work with him for 20 years, but how have you handled perhaps those difficult conversations?
And there are always loads because whether you're working with a brother or partner, colleague, etc., business is tough, sometimes. And so you have difficult decisions as you're trying to work out the journey, the way forward. We were very keen early on to be very clear about our roles and responsibilities and who did what, and then have veto. We said, okay, trust each other. Like, you have veto over this area, I've got veto over this. And so it comes down to trusting. If someone is really passionate about what they want to do and can't be persuaded to your way, ultimately they would have the veto over it. And then I guess, but I guess as brothers, we're very aligned anyway, but we're product guys, so the product always comes first. And we believe that if we get that right, the rest of it sort of should follow well. So we sort of. It's not without difficult discussion every now and again. That's business, but we sort of it tends to work quite well for us.
No, I like that. I like sort of splitting the roles, and then whoever owns that space has the final say. I think that's a really it's an easier way of getting, and it just means you make decisions a lot quicker.
That's it.
And then in terms of funding the business, obviously this is like number one reason why
Course.
people decide to not start companies, because it's too expensive or it might never work, all of that chatter. But I know you touched upon how you initially funded it, but talk us through that part a little bit more.
Yeah, so we had this initial funding in this stock. I still had my day job with my father on the sales role right at the start, so that I had a salary for 6 months. I still had to sell, still had to hit my sales targets, but I was able to. So that meant that the business only had Anthony as a sort of as a salary person. So we were able to manage it through, and obviously we started selling as quick as we could. We then started. I mean, we had an overdraft from HSBC Bank, a small overdraft facility that also helped, and we used credit cards as well to sort of in the early days. But then it was we started invoice debt financing, invoice discounting or factoring. We used that facility. We used that for about 6 or 7 years because In our business, we were buying product generally well ahead of when we would actually sell it and get paid for it. So we had this sort of quite a struggle from a cash flow point of view. So invoice discounting or that debt financing really helped us manage that cash flow in the early days. And then we were able to, as we built the business up, able to get, we got rid of that and then be self-financing and have been self-financing ever since.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you have, I guess, full control over the business.
Yeah, that's right. We're sort of fiercely independent. We own it. We own the business between the two of us. And we love it for that because in a product-based business, and this isn't for everybody, but we have a development cycle for every product that takes about 2 years, no matter how big or small the product is. But some products can take up to 5 years because you're failing along the way during development, so they get pushed back the project. But if we believe in those projects and we want to continue going, having full sort of control and freedom to make those decisions allows us to do those projects. If we had sold to private equity or had other investors on the board, there would be a different agenda on the board that we'd have to contend with, and that just wouldn't work, we don't think. So we've kept it sort of fiercely independent from the start, and for now, want to continue to do so.
I love that because there definitely there's been a few founders that I've spoken to that have decided to go about business that way. But I feel like in 2023, it seems to be the headlines of X startup raised X million pounds. And I guess that's maybe something you guys thought about, but never followed through.
Yes, I mean, our journey was very much organic. We didn't have the seed capital or the big funding at the start to really sort of try and accelerate into the market. We did it by, shop by shop, product on shelf. We did it as fast as we could. We were ambitious and we were driven and we were pretty relentless in and hardworking, but we didn't have that seed capital at the start. There are lots of different journeys people can go on, and no one entrepreneur's journey is right or wrong, etc. But it's really whatever gets you out of bed in the morning, excites you. And that for me is still the case today. I'm still as energized about our potential, about the future direction, about the products we've got in development that we're going to launch next year and the year and the coming years. So I think it's whatever journey suits you and you want to go on is the best one for you.
And you guys have survived, I mean, recessions, COVID,
Yeah.
some really tough times out there. So what advice do you have for those aspiring entrepreneurs or people already in business?
So it's really true. I think the first piece of advice is get the basics working really well. So go back to basics because I think as the business develops, you get loads of opportunities to take the business in lots of different directions and lots of people coming to you with opportunities, etc. Focus on the basics that made the business great at the start, that made you. Made your offering great at the start and do that really, really well. That will see you through all recessions, COVIDs, and all the rest of it. Try and be brilliant at what you do, be the best at what you do in a really focused way, and get the basics right. That will see you through. I would also say that even in recession and COVID periods, etc., there are lots of opportunities. So you want to stay dynamic, nimble, fast-paced, and be looking for those opportunities because there are lots out there. I always say to our team, even when the market is in a downturn, 80% of the things that we can do to drive the business forward are within our control. We've just got to work out how to do it, but it's within our control. If we don't sit there and go, yeah, the market's down, so we're down and all this, we're now. It does have an impact, but I mean, but we're very much of the attitude of go find the opportunities and let's try and get the business moving.
I love that. So focused and just, fiercely optimistic, really. Okay, so we've got some audience questions. I've got Marcella from London that wants to know what achievement are you most proud of?
Great question. I think I would say really being here 20 years later. We didn't we had no grand plan at the start. We had a passion for the, let's say, product and, you know, getting, I think we rejoiced when we got our first retailer on board at a small independent shop. We thought it was fantastic and never thought that we'd get to where we are today, 20 years later. You know, we're selling in 104 countries around the world and have a team of about 250 people, you know. So, yeah, I would say it's probably that.
Amazing. And Alicia says, used to work for these guys a few years ago. It's crazy to see the growth, but she hasn't quite submitted her question yet.
Okay, fantastic.
She was interested to know which founder I was speaking to this morning.
Okay,
so
great.
I
okay, very
did
good.
Send her a message back. Emma wants to know, and I know I sort of asked you this, but I don't think you answered it, Richard. So Emma asks, Emma from London, what is your all-time favorite Joseph & Joseph product?
Yeah, okay, that's great. It's definitely this folding chopping board, this little folding chopping board called Chopped Apart. And there is a very quick story behind it. It actually originated probably about 20 years before we started Joseph Joseph. And I found it in a museum in America. And it was invented, or the original construction of it was by a guy based in Windsor in near London called Mark Sanders. He's this fantastic designer, inventor. And I saw it in the museum. I went back and contacted him and said, this is a great idea. We'd love to redesign it with you and then launch it. He would said, 100%, let's do this. Amazing. So we did it in collaboration with Mark. And it was a real light bulb moment for us about the whole thing about solving a really clear problem through a really simple idea. Keep the idea simple. And it was when you show it to people and they go, why has no one thought of this before? When you hear that, you know you've got it right. And so it was a real light bulb moment for us. And so it's Chopped Apart is my favorite.
Brilliant. And Marcus from Edinburgh says, what drives you and how do you tackle crisis?
What drives me? I'm not too sure what drives me. I think I get a huge kick out of developing something from scratch and then it doing well and resonating with consumers. People go, I love it, love that product, or I love how that works, etc. And it's solving a task. Huge kick out of that. I also equally enjoy the challenge of trying to grow something and grow the business and all of the ups and downs that come with that. I'm quite hardworking. I love an early start. So my big thing is I get in very early to work and I try and get all of the difficult tasks out of the way by 11 a.m. That's my rule because I think I'm fresh. And by 11 a.m., then I can get into these sort of maybe the easier tasks post 11 a.m., but get the difficult stuff out of the way. And that probably includes dealing with crisis. Try and, you know, sleep on it. Don't deal with the crisis unless I absolutely have to at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, try and sleep on it and then deal with it when I'm sort of fresh and energized first thing in the morning.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. And I guess like knowing all now, thank you for the audience questions, but I guess knowing all you know now, is there anything you would have done differently if you were to start over again?
So I would do a whole load of stuff differently if I'd know, you know, because it's like I said, it's never a straight line. The growth is never a straight line. There are loads of ups and downs, loads of failures, loads of misfires, etc. And so there's a long list of things I would have done differently had I known what I've known. I think one of the big things for us that really hurt us early on was protecting our brand and protecting our product designs. We did go through a period where that was very, very painful for us. And we even had our brand name stolen by a company in an overseas market. I won't mention where. And we had to spend 2 years in the courts to get the brand name back in that country. So we had a pretty horrendous time. So I would say taking protection seriously from the start is something we would have done had we known the journey we were going to go on. So probably say that was it.
Definitely. Oh, thank you so much for that. And so what's next for Joseph & Joseph?
So lots. I mean, we've got loads of new product coming out. We've got a very, very exciting launch into a new category in the spring next year that we're really excited about. It's 5 years in development, this range has been. So we are super excited about that. I can't say what it is just yet, but if you keep follow us on social media. You will get the teaser campaigns coming out, and then the product launch will be in about March time. I think there's a lot of areas of for us still to go after in the home, looking at functional products and problems to solve. So, yeah, loads to go after. Still very excited about it.
Amazing. And a question I love to ask all my guests is, what do you want to be remembered for? The reason I ask this question is none of us have exactly picked the easiest path in life. Yeah. So sadly, when it is all said and done, you know, what do you want to be remembered for?
Well, I mean, I sort of, I'd love the brand to be remembered or known for highly innovative, disruptive, sort of clever product, I guess. I guess in a CEO capacity, would like to think that we can build a successful business, and that, for the people who worked in the team, that they were able to get a lot out of it. Yes, it can be a bit cut and thrust sometimes, and we're trying hard to sort of grow and deal with problems, etc. But hopefully they learned a lot on the way, and when they had their time here, that they got a lot out of the business. And then for consumers, that they were never let down by a single product. And we keep a close eye on reviews and to make sure we're delivering what we're promising we're going to deliver. But that the consumers got a lot out of the products that we produced.
That's amazing. And I think that's evident in the awards that you guys keep winning. I guess it's been really great to chat to you today because of the journey you've been on. And I think it's amazing you came from an entrepreneurial family, but actually not just joining the business and stopping there, actually then developing a side business, and now it's grown into Joseph, and Joseph is amazing. And yeah, actually everything you guys have sort of come up against. And I think it's really cool working with your brother as well, and kind of hearing how you guys have tackled that stuff. So I think there's going to be a lot that people listening to the episode will be able to take away. I think it's focus. Focus is like
definitely
a key word.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, amazing. No, very good. Great. Thank you
so much for your time, Richard.
Pleasure.
Have a
absolute
good day.
Pleasure. Thanks a lot.
A massive thank you to Richard for joining me on the podcast. Thank you so much. I really hope you guys enjoy today's episode. As always, if you do, please leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But this year, I want to hear from you. What entrepreneurs do you want me talking to? Who should be on my radar? Whose journey has inspired you that I should be talking to? Please reach out to me on socials. You can also drop me an email. It's all in the show notes below. But I hope you guys have an amazing year. 2024 is your year, and I look forward to joining you on the journey, and I look forward to your business being the best, healthy, profitable, and I hope that, you know, you guys really thrive in everything you do. I look forward to seeing you next week with another entrepreneur. Take care.